We have Sam Goodwin here this morning with his Lizzie and their family. And you know, not only are they missionaries and we love them very much, but Sam goes way back to the youth group days of what was Cornerstone, part of this congregation, the Mother Church of Grace Point. People like Chuck Solomon, myself, Angie Outis, Bill Fravel Jr. were involved in that. Pete Salter. Joyful Sounds can be dismissed. Pete's telling me that. So please go to the Joyful Sounds. So Sam was part of that youth group, and our youth group leaders, some of the leaders at the time were Bob and Ruthie Cooper. So we're going back to the good old days of the early 80s, late 70s. Sam is and Lizzie are serving in Germany, and we are very thankful to have them here with us. You remember at the YMCA, we commissioned them out when they went. Now we're here. Next time they come, we'll be in the new building, so we keep changing locations every time they come back. Sam and I worked at Cornerstone with the college ministry, went on trips to Mexico, were involved in the SOAR soccer ministry, was at CAU and met Lizzie, who was a...
Yeah, it's like my parents, they keep moving every time I come back, and I'm getting to suspect maybe they don't want me to know where they are. Yeah, unfortunately, it's true. I do have a relationship with a lot of you from way on back, which means that the mystery is gone. I can't really fool you anymore. It's depressing. And of course, Bob is still angry with me because we were actually at McGregor back before it was then when there was Cornerstone and so forth. Yeah, and Bob would attack me periodically, and he'd jump on me. I was a victim, and then unfortunately for him, or fortunately for me, wrestling was my sport, and so after a while, I got good enough at it, and I hurt Bob. And
I was the victim.
Yeah, after that, Bob was the victim. Some people have made some requests, and so let me begin with a standard beginning. Guten Morgen, wer hier spricht Deutsch? Keiner? Nun, die Predigt heute Morgen kommt über Josef und kommt aus dem ersten Buch Mose, Kapitel 37. Und das Thema für heute, die Predigt heute, ist die Perspektiven, die wir haben oder haben können, wenn wir in Christus sind. Okay. I want to let you know that this was requested that I begin in German. I won't continue on that way. I guess I could read the whole text in German, but the problem is, you see, you look at me and you think, I got nothing. You just stare at me. And if the whole sermon went this way, after a while, either you'd get up and leave, or you would just fall asleep. All right. I've just described the last 4 years of my life. Okay? There is, to be able, and when you have missionaries, you're coming from overseas. For those of you who have traveled, and you go into other countries, and you have your little phrase book with you, right? And there's nothing more exciting than having these magical syllables and sounds that you say, and you don't really know what they mean. Of course, they have the English translation under them, so supposedly it means what it is you're saying, unless you get hit, right? So, yo quiero un taco, something, right? And I don't know what that means, but I know that magically a taco arrives. Right. And that's really cool. And everywhere you travel, you got your phrase book, and it's a puzzle. And you try and learn as many of those phrases as you can over a period of time. And again, all this magical stuff happens. People respond magically in the magical pattern, like they said they predicted would happen. And then after 2 weeks or sometime around there, you get to go home. And it was fun. But then something happens when you go to another country, and you have your phrase book. And at some point, it dawns on you, you're not going home. And so what was good enough for getting food at a restaurant is now no longer good enough because you can't hold meaningful conversations with anybody. You can't talk about the stuff of life with anybody. You can't talk about theological things. You can't talk about personal things. You can't talk about hurts, hopes, and dreams. You can't do any of that just asking for a taco. And your frustration levels begin to rise, and you sit in a church service, and you hear Sunday after Sunday a sermon that's not in your language, singing songs that are not in your language. And so to be able to come back and hear it, It's wonderful to hear the gospel preached in your own language. And so when you have missionaries that come back and you wonder why they're frustrated or they're tired or why they just burst into tears when they sit and hear hymns, it's why. It's wonderful. So, naja, German, crazy language. Okay. So the text this morning is a smattering text. I pulled it from a variety of places out of Genesis. So the goal is to paint a picture or give some background on a story you all know well. So my goal is not to read all of the story of Joseph here, but to jump through it, just to kind of draw your attention through the text here a little bit as we go. And I'm starting in chapter 37 of the book of Genesis, here beginning in verse 1. Jacob lived in the land of his fathers, sojournings in the land of Canaan, and these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers, and he was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a robe of many colors, but when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. Now, Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. And he said to them, "Hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brothers said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to rule over us?" And so they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Jumping down to the beginning of verse of chapter 39, verse 1. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard and Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his Egyptian master. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. Verse 6. And so he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And she spoke to Joseph day after day. He would not listen to her, to lie beside her or be with her. Verse 20. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Continuing. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and the baker committed an offense against the Lord, their Lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them, and they continued for some time in custody. And one night they both dreamed. the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt who were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled, and so he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in his master's house, "Why are your faces downcast today?" And they said to him, "We have had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me." Verse 14. "Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit." 41, verse 1. "And after 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile." This is the reading of God's word. Les Mis is probably one of the greatest Broadway musicals of all time. I confess, I cry every time I see it. And thematically, it wrestles with law versus grace and mercy, and it struggles with hopes and broken dreams, with love and rejection. And in one central moment of the play, Fantine is a dying woman whose life has been shattered by rejection and disease and disappointment, is singing her last song as she looks back on her ruined life. The song is entitled, "I Dreamed a Dream," and it has this last line, these words: "I had a dream my life would be so different from this hell I'm living, so different now from what it seemed. And now life has killed the dream I dreamed." And there in her hospital bed, her body's broken and wasted, and she dies, disillusioned and crushed by life, as others stand around and watch silently. And sometimes I watch it. Yeah? And as the last notes fade away, I whisper, "Yes! I know exactly what you're saying." Or I pray, "Please, God, don't let that happen to me." And it touches something deep within us. It either describes how our life was or is, or it puts a finger on one of our greatest fears. 17 years old. He's a boy with dreams. Big dreams. Dreams that he thought came from God himself. He's a beloved, carefree, dream-filled 17-year-old boy, and he's sent on an errand by his father to see how his brothers are doing, and he never returns. His own brothers see him coming, and they talk about killing him, but wiser voices prevail, and so instead they throw him in a hole. They steal his robe, cover it in blood, and pretend he's dead. The brothers didn't like his dreams. They didn't like the message or the messenger, and so they got rid of both. And at 17 years old, this boy is sold to a group of passing merchants. Actually, some of his illegitimate second cousins, to be precise. And he's dragged off to a foreign country as a slave. This is not the way the dream was supposed to go. Dad thinks he's dead, and no one is going to come looking for him. He's then sold to a high-ranking army officer and works faithfully as his servant for about 9 or 10 years. His loyalty, his morality, his honor to God and his master are rewarded by being accused and convicted and sent to prison for a crime he didn't commit. He was sent to a filthy, dangerous prison, and he has no real hope of ever seeing freedom again. What about that dream? Could he have been so wrong? His dream was so different from this hell he's living. Has life killed his dream? And so it's here this morning that we enter into this drama. And we get to watch this terrible story of betrayal and injustice unfold. we get to ask the same questions that had to have been going on through Joseph's mind at some point. Where is God? Or more fundamentally, perhaps, is there a God? Why me? What have I done wrong? Or I know there's got to be a lesson here. And maybe when I learn this lesson, it'll all be over. What lesson have I not learned that I still need to learn? See, in Joseph's story, though, we know the end of the story, right? I mean, all we got to do is read to the end of Genesis. His dream does come true. He does rise to great power. His brothers do bow down before him. And he is responsible for saving the known world from starving to death. So we watch him. We're sitting there with Joseph. You know, he's sitting there in prison, and we're with him, and we say, Joseph, don't give up. Just stay strong. Keep trusting. Your life is about to get really good in just a few pages. Because you see, you and I, when we look at Joseph's life, we have perspective. We can look at Joseph's life and see the whole picture. We can look at it and see the goal and even perhaps appreciate how the process worked perfectly to achieve his desired effect. But he doesn't necessarily have that advantage. And just like you and I often don't have that advantage in our life. This passage gives us three perspectives from which we can examine Joseph's situation. It gives us the visible perspective, the invisible perspective, and the eternal perspective. Gives us the visible perspective, the invisible perspective, and the eternal perspective. And I hope it'll encourage us to examine and live our own lives with the same perspectives. So let's look at the visible perspective. The visible perspective says, I know what I see. I know what I feel. And I can make decisions and judgments about my circumstances from my senses. This is how we most often live our lives on a daily basis, right? Cause and effect. Don't touch the hot stove, it will burn you. If you cheat on your tests, you will get into trouble. Or if you get caught cheating on the test. If you eat too much, you'll get fat. The visible perspective involves observing the circumstances and interpreting life through that. We have a certain sense of order or ought when it comes to this. Eat well and exercise ought to lead to better health. Study hard ought to lead to good grades. Treat people well ought to lead to being treated well in return. And when our actions don't lead to the expected result, we get confused, perhaps disillusioned, or even angry. Daughters come home from school confused and angry because there she was sitting in class, behaving herself, and two other kids off to the side are misbehaving, and now the whole class can't go out to play in recess. It's not just. It's not fair. It's not right. So she's disillusioned and angry. That's on a low level, but we have the same thing as we get older. Joseph knew certain things. He knew he didn't deserve to be in prison. He knew he hadn't done anything wrong. It's Potiphar and God when he got up and ran away from the very persistent and probably very pretty wife of his master. In fact, he had actually demonstrated more than just mere self-control and honor regarding her. He had decided that honoring God was more important than either having female companionship or getting revenge against the man who had kept him as a slave these last 9 years. Ooh, wouldn't that feel good to get back at him? I'll just take a little something from him. She wants me. Hey. He persisted in honoring this God, who, by the way, had not seen fit to keep him from being dropped in a hole, dragged from his country, and sold as a slave. Joseph is sitting in jail with his visible perspective, and he screams out, a visible perspective that screams out, there is no God. Okay, there is a God, but he's forgotten you. Or you're being punished. Or you don't deserve this. We know he doesn't like his circumstances, and we know he doesn't believe he deserves to be there. And after he finishes interpreting the dreams of the baker and the cupbearer, he tells the cupbearer in Genesis 40, "Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh. So get me out of this house, for I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews. And here also I have done nothing that they should put me in the pit." But only a few verses later, we discover that not only does the cupbearer get out of prison as Joseph foretold, but then he completely forgets him. And Joseph proceeds to rot in prison for 2 more years. Totally unfair. The visible have escaped the pain, become angry at the injustice, get revenge, or just give up. Resign yourself to your plight. It's fate. Where are you? Think back over this year. Getting older, retiring. Body's not working the way it used to. This isn't what you had planned in your retirement years. Relationships within the family aren't as good. You find yourself in the middle of a divorce. This isn't what you pictured. This isn't how it was worked out in your mind when you got married. This isn't what it means to be a Christian, is it? You're lonely. You're not married. You wish you were. This isn't what you had. The romantic music has not been playing in your ears. Relationships you'd hope you'd have. High school, middle school's not going the way you'd hoped. Not as popular as you'd hoped you'd be. You're not as successful at sports as you'd hoped you'd be. You're not doing as well in grades. And you're looking at college. You're not sure what's going to happen. And where are you on the scale of where you think God is letting you down? Are you crying out unfair? Are you filled with anger or resentment or even pride or fear? Is there another perspective perhaps then to be had? We certainly have the visible perspective, don't we? We can't escape it. But see, this passage also shows us the invisible perspective. Chapter 39, verse 21 reads, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison." And then verse 23, "The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything in Joseph's charge." Why? Because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Steadfast love. The Hebrew word there is chesed, but, and it means steadfast love, but persistent, pursuing, and unfailing love. So one teacher of mine described it one time, it's like God's radar love. And God's radar, when God locks onto you with his radar, you're all over the map trying to get away from God, but the whole time, his radar love is locked onto you and you can't escape it. That's God's steadfast love. And everything he did, God was showing his steadfast love. Yeah. If my life is what showing me steadfast love and granted me good fortune looks like to you, Lord, then I don't think those words mean what you think they mean. Reminded, of course, of Princess Bride, right? And the little Sicilian keeps saying, "Inconceivable. Can't be that these things are happening. Inconceivable," over and over again. And then Andre the Giant's character says, "I'm thinking maybe that word doesn't mean what you think it means." Okay? And so if God's talking to me about his steadfast love, and we're looking at Joseph's life, and as Joseph is plodding through prison, the scriptures keep describing Joseph as, and God was with him and blessing him. Yeah. Well, apparently blessing doesn't mean the same thing. I'm rotting in prison. But you see, there's something else going on here. Something that Joseph cannot see in his circumstances, and something that you and I cannot on our own see in ours. It is an invisible but very real perspective that is completely hidden from us, and unless we're told about it, we can't know. We're told that in the midst of all these terrible circumstances, the Lord was showing steadfast love to Joseph. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases, as we're told in Lamentations. It's his faithful, pursuing, persistent, unfailing mercy for his people. It's this steadfast love that characterizes God's way of dealing with you and with me, regardless of our circumstances. Joseph was in prison, and yet the scriptures make it very clear that there was something going on that Joseph could not see. You see, God took a country, Hebrew, shepherding boy of 17 years old, and moved him to a household where he could learn the Egyptian culture. He could learn the language. He could learn their etiquette and leadership skills from the head of Pharaoh's guard. And then God tenderly cared for Joseph by taking him out of the house of Potiphar, where he would have been a slave all of his life. And Joseph learned humility, and he learned perseverance in his unhappy circumstances. And God placed him in a cell where the cupbearer of the Pharaoh would share their dreams. And 2 years later, when the moment was perfect, the Pharaoh had a dream. And the cupbearer says, "The memory stirs. Makes me think of a man." And God takes this now 30-year-old man and says, "Now, wheels are to turn." But you see, for some of you and some of me, an invisible perspective simply isn't enough. When I'm in pain, sometimes I don't care if God is with me. I'm in prison and I want out. I want free from pain. I want free from loneliness. You're with me? You're loving me? You're making me succeed? Ha. I don't think those words mean what you think they mean. This is not my dream. I mean, I see people around me who are healthy. They're successful. They're beautiful. They're married. They have kids. They're smart. They're happy. If you really love me, you'd give me that, whatever that is, right? This, whatever's going on right now, this here, this is not my dream. And sometimes, God, if I'm honest, my dreams are more important than you are. Regardless of whether my perspective is visible or invisible. We're a little bit like a Homer Simpson. A friend of his has purchased an industrial deep fryer. It'll flash an entire buffalo in 40 seconds. Homer finds out about this. He says, 40 seconds? But I want it now. Okay. We're like that. I gotta wait. You see, we lack perspective. I mean, we've got a degree of visible perspective, and perhaps we are aware of an invisible perspective, but we need an eternal perspective. So the third perspective is the eternal one. And in some ways, you see, pain and pleasure are the opposite sides of the same coin. Both of them tempt us to block out the past or the future. Unchecked, pain and pleasure drive us to become completely self-absorbed and self-focused. Pain and pleasure actually turn us all into narcissists, don't they? I can't even pay attention. If I'm in enough pain, I can't pay attention to the world around me. It's all about me. I get to start navel-gazing and looking at my life. People, things, relationships either become objects to avoid or to use to help us relieve the pain or obtain the pleasure. Time stops. Pain and pleasure become all-consuming. And unless we have an eternal perspective, all of life will be evaluated on the basis of what I'm feeling right now. Life becomes, I just want what I want. I deserve to be happy. I want good grades, but I haven't studied, so I'll steal them. Life isn't treating me the way I dreamed, and it feels good. It feels good to feel grumpy. So I'm going to wallow in my self-pity. We've all been there. Joseph had many, many opportunities to become angry, become bitter and depressed. His visible perspective alone would have led to it. But he didn't, did he? Or if he did, he didn't stay there. And that's because he not only had an invisible, for example, in verse 39, how can I do this thing with Potiphar's wife and commit so great a sin against God? Or in chapter 40, do not interpretations belong to God? But he also had an eternal perspective, because we find out in chapter 45, he's talking to his brothers, and he says in verse 5, do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. God sent me before you? Joseph had to have an eternal perspective to say something like that. Joseph had to be willing to say, I don't know why I'm suffering right now. I don't know why I have to delay my dreams right now, but I am certain of this. God has placed me here, here in this hole, here in this caravan, here in Potiphar's wife, here in prison, and then eventually here with Potiphar. And so Joseph says, since here is where God has placed me, this is where I will serve faithfully, even though I don't understand. And in the book of Habakkuk, near the end of the Old Testament, Habakkuk cries out to God because of the injustice he sees all around him. And God comes to him in chapter 1, verse 5, and he says, look among the nations and wonder and be astounded. For I am doing a work in your day that you would not believe if I told you. Could Joseph have imagined that his being sent to Egypt was an essential part of the plan to preserve Jacob's family, that would result in the saving of his people from a famine, but would also result in the sending of a Savior who would save his people, not from immediate, but from eternal death? In his suffering, Joseph was being prepared. He was being prepared to serve. He was being prepared to trust. He was being prepared to lead. God was not interested in seeing Joseph suffer simply to see him suffer. God was creating and molding and perfecting Joseph. See, the problem is we can't just muster up an eternal perspective. I can't simply look at Joseph and be told, you should stop only having a visible perspective. You see, the only reason we can have an eternal perspective when we consider our own suffering and fears and the suffering and fears around us is because of the cross. For those who have a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, we are promised that everything will be used for our good. And although when right now we look around along with Joseph and say, Lord, I don't understand, you're promised that because Christ entered into your suffering, that there is hope, and there is meaning, and there is purpose. And it really does result in our good. You see, there is an eternal goal. But the only way that you and I can have an eternal perspective is to keep your eyes on the one who did what Joseph did, but better. You and I cannot do what Joseph did, or do what Jesus did, unless we love what Jesus loves. Unless we see ourselves, our world, eternity, and our God the way Jesus did, we will never have an eternal perspective. Only in Christ, only in Christianity, can we have an eternal perspective that says, in Romans 8, for I consider that the sufferings and pleasures of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. It's not that suffering doesn't hurt. It's not that pleasure isn't fun. It's just that now we have perspective. We can live like Joseph does. And the Apostle Paul describes in Philippians 4, for I have learned in whatever situation I am, to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. And in any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need, and I can do all things through him who strengthens me. But how? In one way, Joseph could only properly interpret his circumstances after in his life after he rose to power in Egypt. But the reality is, Joseph would never be able to appreciate what God was doing until after he entered eternity. And for us now, the full glory and understanding and appreciation of what God is doing through each of us won't be fully known until Christ comes again. But for now, because of Jesus Christ, we're free to live life, take risks, and dream dreams that conditions and circumstances cannot kill. Are you willing to surrender? Are you willing to surrender yourself to Him? To surrender your dreams? To surrender the pleasure and the pain of the moment to Him and His perspective? Let's close in prayer.